Good morning. Buenos dias. Matt, thank you so much for bringing us in this morning.
Hey, Lydia, how are you?
Doing pretty well. It's a nice Monday, a little breezy, as you said. Of course, we've got some traffic. We're so excited. It is March, the first Monday of March, and it is our Rainmaker session. This segment is dedicated to telling stories about how communities here in Tucson and beyond, in our beloved Southern Arizona, our great state, and even the whole Southwest region are thriving. Rainmakers today is bringing in, excitedly, our guest today is Cassie Diaz. Cassie, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning.
It's so wonderful to have you here today as we kick off Women's History Month, a whole month where, particularly on this segment and throughout the Morning Voice show every day, I'm sure we're going to be highlighting a lot of different successes about leadership, about women, the impact to community. And again, I want to welcome you to Rainmakers and welcome all of our listeners. Cassie, so it's wonderful to have you in the studio. Tell us a little bit before we get started. I know you have, I've had the pleasure of knowing you for many years in many capacities. We have attended summits and national conferences together. We've served on boards together. I've been able to follow the great programs that you do in your career, in your corporate job, but also many initiatives and programs that you're leading outside of work in your other, I'm going to say, evening jobs, side jobs, and of course your doctoral studies. So we're going to get to all of that this morning. First, I thought maybe our listeners could hear just a little snippet about you and how long you've been in Tucson. What brought you here?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So I first want to say, Jess, this is beautiful. I'm so excited that you have this opportunity to share your voice on this topic, on this subject about Arizona, because I'm actually a Texan living in Arizona, in Tucson. And so I'm from San Antonio and joined the Marine Corps at 17. And it first brought me here to Fort Huachuca, Arizona, south of Tucson, and studied down there for about a year before being stationed in 29 Palms, California.
Woo-hoo.
So
came the desert.
Back. I know. And we have come back to the Tucson area three times. So we've left a couple of times based on just being DOD contractors, and we keep coming back to Tucson. And every time we think about leaving, yes, we would love to live on a beach somewhere, a sunny beach, and just live out our days. But I think it's Tucson for now, and we keep choosing Tucson over and over. So military contractors now, and we just love it here.
Well, that is fabulous. And yes, I love your story of coming from another part of the Southwest over in San Antonio and down to Fort Huachuca. That's a very different setting, certainly weather-wise and atmosphere-wise, I'm sure. And the fact that you keep re-falling in love with Tucson and coming back. Well, we're very lucky to have you and your family doing great things. So let's talk a little bit about, I love that in your profiles, when folks ask you, you know, Cassie, what makes you tick, or what do you do, or what is your role in this great world that we have? I love that you always call yourself a people champion and a storyteller. Tell me a little bit about why you consider yourself a storyteller. What draws you to that?
I think when we are in groups of people, like when I met you, I remember meeting you up in Phoenix for the very first time. And you came up to, there was a group of us standing there, and you said, "These girls are from Tucson." And I thought, who is this lady and how does she know I'm from Tucson? I was pretty sure I was under the radar and, you know, just like doing my thing. But I love that about you. You are very open and very positive. And, you know, what is Lydia's story? Who is she? What is she doing here? And, you know, I think it's the same traverse. Like, you are an empower of people, an empower of stories, and you, very much the same as me, you like to enjoy people telling their stories, because I feel like everyone has a story, and most people will tell you their story is not important. Most people will tell you their story doesn't matter. Most people will tell you they're just like everyone else, but they're not. because we're all different and unique. And I believe everybody has a story that needs to be told.
Oh gosh, so well said. And thank you so much for remembering that. Yes. I do remember when we first met. In fact, it was at a conference of predominantly women, predominantly but not exclusively Latina women, and about leadership. And it's a national conference that is put on by HACER. And it had come to Arizona. It had been a while since that national conference bounces all around the country to big cities and medium communities and all that. And it had been quite a while since it had been in Phoenix. But there we were. And yes, I saw you and your colleagues and knew some of them. What I remember also about that time is we participated in a breakout session. And in that session, it was a smaller, more intimate setting of about 12 of us, I think 12 or 15 sitting up, you know, among the gorgeous background of the resort that we were in, but speaking very much about our career journeys, what motivates us, what challenges we faced, and how we had found not only our own way through, but how we had leveraged mentors or strove to be mentors ourselves. And you were very sharing in that. You had a lot to say and a lot of observations. I was watching you watch others, and I've always really appreciated that skill that you have. You're a very good listener, but you pick up on a lot of points. So I'm going to guess that in your profile and in calling yourself a storyteller, let's talk a little bit about some roles you play in community, in women leadership associations, tapping into your veteran status from the Marines, which, you know, is it hoorah? Is that the right
hoorah
word? Hoorah, yes. I always try to remember the right call out for each different branch. But, you know, that's no joke. That is no easy path, being a Marine. Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I would even go as far as to say, when I first met you, I think I was just getting into the idea of community leadership and being in roles outside of the organization I was working for. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, I think when you work for the government for so long, you are doing things in the community, but maybe just not for where everyone can see.
Sure.
And I think sometimes when you work for the government, there's always this stigma of judgment over what you do for the government, what you're doing in the community, if you're doing enough, not doing enough, what that looks like to others, and if the role that you're playing is significant enough, not significant enough. And so I just kind of always shied away from that judgment or from any of that kind of consideration. And I think that, you know, going into these roles in the community have been so important, have really, really opened my eyes, because there are a lot of needs in our communities. I think when we look at Southern Arizona and we look at U of A thriving around us at Bear Down, I'm a Wildcat too, by the way. You look at everything that's thriving, and underneath everything that's thriving, there are just so many trickling needs. And just like you said, from veterans in our area and you know, working on and supporting the homeless population and working in these different roles, these leadership roles, they're really not to have a title. They're really not to engage in, you know, oh, you know, look at me, this is what I'm doing. It's more about, you know, having a title that opens up a venue for you to support organizations, whether it's monetarily, whether it's your time. Time generally is the one that most people need. They need time. They need people to, you know, go in and separate things and support in different ways. I know recently I saw you and Rich supported the food bank of
yes.
Southern Arizona, and going in, it's your time that most of these organizations need.
Yes.
And so having these roles and being able to go in and bring a group of people, that's really what it's all about. It's about being able to provide your time where you can, conversation, support. And then lastly, I'll just say networking.
Yes.
Meeting you has just been amazing, because I've seen you network, and the power of positive networking and the power of saying hello is so amazing. And I think so many of us forget that.
Yes.
When we're in our roles and our spaces, we forget that hello and that motion. Some of us actually really are introverts at heart. And so it's like so hard. Like, I just want to say hello to Lydia right now. And it's so hard. She's around so many people. And I know she's going to introduce me to so many people. And so I just really think, you know, it's the idea of saying the needs of the community are more important than my introverted self. And so most of the time I have a hard time saying no. But I think there's a lot of needs. There's so many areas people could step into today, right now, and give their time.
Well, I appreciate you saying that and your observations. I see you doing that, stepping out of yourself. I never would have guessed that you were an introvert. But I do think even those of us who are extroverted, everybody needs a pause. Whenever we walk into a room, a new room, even those who are of the most gregarious nature need to sort of pause and assess and maybe figure out, you know, what's my energy level today and where do I want to be? I see you always stepping up to be of service. So I love how you phrase that, because oftentimes that's what we want to teach other people, whether it is our students, our family members, just our colleagues and friends, that anyone who's trying to do something new, sometimes it's pulling from within yourself just to be of service. And like you said, it starts with hello. It starts with showing up and being present. So servant leadership, motivation, something we're going to talk about in our next segment. I do think we're coming close to our first break. So as we gear up for that, thank you for listening. This is Monday Morning Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI. And we're back. You're listening to The Morning Voice, and this is Monday with Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and I'm so excited for my guest today as we kick off Women's History Month. We have Cassie Diaz, and we are talking about leadership, about motivation, about energy and service to community, and how we all get inspired to tell our own stories or to tell the stories of others. Cassie, so excited to have you here this morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
In our last, right before the break, we were talking a little bit about what makes us tick and why stories to us are so important, and also the energy that happens when we all interact with each other. I am thinking of a posting I saw recently that you had posted on social media, where you were talking about the excitement that was going on around some engineering opportunities and engineering events. But I loved how you kicked it off with the tagline of "What motivates a motivator?" Talk to us about that. What motivates a motivator like you, and why was that your link into your connection into that posting?
I think when you think about going back to school, for many people, whether you're early career, whether you're mid-career, whether you're on your second career, you are going to school nowadays for the most part while you have a full-time job. You're working full-time, you're going to school part-time, sometimes even full-time, which mm-hmm. might be a little crazy. But you're going to school because you are motivated and excited to add to your vitae. And when you think about the individuals that we are hoping will take that course that I added, which, by the way, doesn't exist at universities across the U.S. University of Arizona is piloting that course specifically for systems engineering in the integration and test field. And integration and test as a master's degree, master's certificate, further in higher education does not exist at universities across the U.S. So U of A is piloting this as brand new, first of its first. And for me, that is extremely motivating, because sure. that just started 3 years ago. So when you think about what motivates a motivator, it's seeing a problem statement come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And that was just, it's just been so exciting and pivotal to watch the engineers across U of A and other businesses come together and create this program and this opportunity for individuals for the future of engineering. And so what motivates a motivator? Things that don't exist, things that come to fruition, things that are new, things that are innovative, right? So many times we might be fearful of throwing something brand new out on the table, but when it's finally there, we have to celebrate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and first of all, how exciting that our own U of A is piloting this. I did read that a little bit in the post, but didn't quite understand that this was not only new at the U of A and in our community, but new all over.
Yes.
Another great thing that our University of Arizona is doing. And you know, on Fridays, on Fridays, Dr. Ackerley, as part of the Morning Voice, does a show. And one of his segments is all about U of A Wonder. And maybe this is something that can go and you can speak further along, perhaps with the founders or the designers of this program. That would be awesome. So let's make sure to get that plug in and have you back on that. Motivating motivators, being of service, communicating and storytelling, all are, they just exude from you so naturally. Tell me about how coming from San Antonio, joining up with the Marines, having that career, which, by the way, anyone going into the Marines, you know, that's a challenge. That's something that pulls at all of your strengths and skills, and you learn more. But doing that as a woman, what extra bootstraps did you have to pull up from? Did you have family, even if your family maybe questioned or maybe they were encouraging you or somebody was a role model that you said, I'm going to go do that? Tell us a little bit about what made you go down that path.
Let's see, Lydia. I only have like 5 minutes to tell this huge story. No, but I would say I've always, I think, had this desire to travel, to be out. Most of my family, they are teachers, counselors. They work for local school districts in San Antonio. Mm. And so when I joined the Marines, it definitely was a head turner. What are you doing? Where are you going? Why? What are you thinking? And so joining, though, I actually got really lucky. I do have to say, joining, I chose aviation operations as our field. It's not like today where you get to choose your MOS. They're so lucky today, right? I look at a lot of the students that are joining and they're like, oh, I'm going to be this. And I'm like, how do you already know what you're going to be? Like,
isn't that amazing?
It is. I'm like, have we changed that much in 20 years? And so I was slotted for an MOS as a drone pilot. And I initially thought, do I have to change the oil? Because I don't change the oil in my car. I did initially think, like, what does this mean? Can we go through the job description first? Like, are you sure you have the right person? And so just coming down here to Fort Huachuca, this world for the drone space is huge.
And absolutely.
A lot of people, excuse me, sorry, if you talk to them, you'll find out they have some relation to the drone field, especially here in this area. And I had an opportunity to become an external pilot for drones. And in a lot of cases, it doesn't even exist anymore. Technology has advanced so crazy.
And so quickly.
So quickly in the last 20 years. And going into that field and doing that, that is where I became the first female to become an external pilot for the drone system I was flying at the time.
Congrats on that.
Thank you. And when I chose to get out, I did go to work for a DoD contractor, and their aircraft they were supporting was for the United States Army. And they gave me an opportunity to attempt that MOS as well, to be an external pilot for their aircraft. And I succeeded there as well. So going through, you know, that conversation, I think it was a couple of years ago, I think I had met you in Phoenix already. Mm-hmm. And they had put my name down in the museum in Fort Huachuca. And I thought to myself, this is so crazy. And my children were looking at me like, Mom, what did you do? And I thought to myself, I had never really told that story to them because we're living life and they're living it with me. And I just assume they know, but sure. They don't know. They're kids. And so I'm telling this story to our oldest daughter for the first time. And she looked at me. She was like, that's what you do when we're at school. Like, you do that when we're
like, secret lives of parents, you know,
right?
That they have what they do in their day jobs.
Exactly. And I think it's one of those things, too, like, if you're a parent and you do something super cool, share it with your kids before you realize they have no idea what you do during your day job, you know? But I think that's important too, just like sharing the bits and pieces, because I think it reminds our kids that anything is possible. And even though we think it's normal or it's just what I do for a job, it's maybe not normal. Like, this is, you know, just thinking about what you're doing right now and sharing voices, it's so empowering and it's so positive. You have to share that. So I think about that when you said that, and sharing with the next generation, sharing with the kids, sharing, you know, when my kids would come over and they would talk to me, Miss, what do you do? I'm thinking about joining the military. You never know what conversation is going to open to the
Absolutely.
Next generation. And I think that we can't forget that.
You bring up such a great point. I like to use the phrase, you know, the old adage of we don't know what we don't know. And we can't assume that others understand what we're speaking of, because we don't know their point of reference. And transitions, as we're going through them in our lives, going along our journeys, personal or professional or educational, relationships, meeting others, and what that spurs in us, what that motivates in us to either pursue or maybe find a little more comfort in something that we might be a little bit afraid of or nervous about. And the impact that that has on those around us, who may not always be younger, but they might be lesser experienced in whatever it is that we're talking about, whatever field excites us, might be scary to somebody else or just confusing. It all comes down to communication, as you are pointing out, and that's the story and that's the sharing. It might spark interest. I have no doubt that you have had this experience a lot, going into whether it's a classroom or a room full of colleagues or teammates who want to hear your story because they might be thinking, how do I get that job? Or I didn't know that even was a job or a role. And I always find that question interesting whenever I'm asked to guest speak or to keynote or to give a presentation, and I imagine you get that too. Your example with your own daughter, who said, "Mom, you know, wait a minute, you're mom," and that's just a different flair on things. I think it is absolutely worth mentioning again. Not only your drone external pilot, is that the right way to say yes. that, but the first woman in ever to do that, to
yes.
in the category in
the DOD
in
to fly
DOD.
Two different series of aircraft.
That's yes. amazing. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. And that is noteworthy. That is museum worthy.
Thank you.
And pride. And certainly for your family and for all of us in Arizona to say we can claim Cassie Diaz and here's what she's done.
Arizona can claim me any day.
And the Wildcats
and the Bear Wildcats.
Down, knowing that's there. Well, I know your education did not stop at the U of A. You have gone on to earn a master's at GCU and are pursuing a PhD. We're going to talk about that in our next segment. You are listening to Rainmakers on KVOI, The Morning Voice. Whoa, 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 whoa. Good morning, everyone. This is Rainmakers on Monday, March 3rd. I'm Lydia Aranda, and I've got my guest, Cassie Diaz, in here, and we are loving the vibe. Thank you, Matt Neely. Tribute to Chaka Khan and the late, great Whitney Houston with I'm Every Woman. What a wonderful song for our segment, and we are here on the first Monday of Women's History Month. Cassie Diaz, thank you for being here with us. You are definitely a people champion, a storyteller, you just are a career enhancer and motivator to so many, and you are here in Tucson, Department of Defense, veteran Marine from San Antonio, come to Tucson often, several times in your life, I want to say, where you keep making this home for you and your family. So we're so happy to have you here. And we were talking before our last break about education and the kind of things that motivate us, the way that we go through transition in our personal lives, our career lives, advancing and chasing those things that we're interested in. You have done that a few times. I first want to say U of A. Yeah. What was your undergrad degree in?
My undergrad at U of A was in intelligence studies. Had a focus on international relations and CIA, FBI history. So U of A did a great job on that program.
What a wonderful field of study. And I have to say, when I read that, I was like, I didn't even know there was a program like that. I think it's fantastic and so appropriate. So my undergrad was in intercultural communication. I think there's some similarities there in the sense of what we understand about people and with people when communication happens. And then what I'm going to say, what it sounds like a little bit in your field, that then you take that and interpret what do you do with the data, with that intel, if you will, and how does that make you more intelligent about the people or issues that you're studying. So then you took that further, went to Grand Canyon University for your master's in
Lopes up.
Pardon me?
So my master's degree is in psychology with an emphasis in industrial and organizational psychology. What makes people tick?
Yes, and what a great blend is the next step from your bachelor's. Well, you have taken that now, even the next step. You are a doctoral candidate, chasing your PhD, and I was looking at the exact description, I'm going to bring it up here, of what your dissertation is. Let's see if I have this right. United States Marine Corps Veteran Women, Microaggressions Predicting Organizational Commitment.
Yes.
There's a lot in that title.
There is a lot.
There are a lot of things that it sounds like you are studying there. I wonder if you might take us down the a little bit of a path, a little bit of the journey that you're taking in what you are going to be looking at in this research. I have some thought that what you're looking at there is how microaggressions inform what's going on in an organization. Am I a little bit right there?
So I think the inform part would be if you were not predicting. So qualitative and quantitative studies are either going to inform or predict. You're correct there. In predicting, I want to pull the quantitative data. So I want to take the openings and the future of research considerations from that qualitative or quantitative data and pull that into a quantitative study, which is what we're going to be predicting from here. So to your point, I want to take that analysis, those metrics, and I want to be able to predict what an organizational culture is going to look like from a commitment standpoint with this study. And just going into this is a timestamp as of last Friday that I posted. It has been a huge journey. Like you said, I think when people go into their PhD or they go into these studies, I think a lot of times they're like, oh, they think they're the smartest person in the room. I don't think I'm the smartest person in the room about everything, but I will tell you, like, I have been studying microaggressions at this point for an entire year and a half. So I should be a little bit smart on at a minimum microaggressions. So really, really excited to have this stamp in time where completing residency, this is the presentation that I provided. So hopefully, though, the goal of this is to be able to provide resources to organizations that say, if your organizational culture looks like this, that is inclusive of microaggressions, which I think microaggressions are actually a normal part of everyday life in most places, and they can be positive and negative. So microaggressions are not necessarily a negative viewpoint or a negative conversation or a negative consideration. I think we have to acknowledge that too. But how do they predict if people are going to stay with you or not? And I think companies today more than ever want to know that. Are people going to stay with me or not? When I make this hire, are they going to commit to me and stay with me? So hopefully you'll be able to provide some resources at the end of this.
I find that so interesting, and you touched on so many key things there. So let's go back just a little bit. I'm going to say back to you some of those things that I heard. So first of all, this is looking at a particular group because they're your study group, but you are using that as a basis of how organizations in general might get better informed about what's going on in their organizational culture, their team environment, maybe in their industry, and all organizations, for-profit, nonprofit, government agency, small business, have a working environment or a working culture. So what you're saying is there are things that happen normally in the interaction of communication and just of working together that are bursts. And those are very similar to bursts of adrenaline. There are things that tick and trigger and create energy. And they're called microaggressions because sometimes they stimulate fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they might stimulate folks coming together around problem solving or maybe in the creation of something new. So those can be very positive, sort of team building, if you will, in a very different sense. So you're looking at how those will inform whether folks are going to stick it out in the project, in the company, in the industry. So that's really exciting because I'm not sure all of us in our daily lives think about that when we think about our work culture. And for me, someone who gets the pleasure of working with many different organizations, small, large, corporate, nonprofit, or agency, in my consulting work and over the years, being a leader, a regional leader, or a project leader and an executive, we have to think about all those things all at once when we're planning what our division or what our purpose is and whether we're meeting our mission. You do that as well, not only in your daily work with your company, but this I find really, really is going to be maybe exciting research that you come away with using that basis of Marine women and what's going on there. So I don't know if I described that all correctly, but I'm thinking folks out who are listening can't see you nodding. So let's let you say a little bit more about that. How are you going to do this kind of study? Is this going to be surveys? Is this going to be observing people? Is it going to be input from bosses and division leaders? Or how might you track that?
Yes. So this will be a quantitative study, and it's going to be a survey. So it'll come out from Qualtrics. Qualtrics will do all the work. So I'm super excited about that. But yes, there have been previous research studies that have shown that actually the United States Marine Corps does not have sufficient quantitative data in this space. And so that's the gap that I'm hoping to fill.
Okay.
There's actually quite a bit of research for the other services. And so quite a few of our studies over the past couple of years have shown United States Marine Corps women are not speaking up and answering some of these surveys on different topics too,
sure.
not just this topic. But so we're really going to hope that I'm able to pull from that audience and get them to answer a couple of surveys here. So really excited about it, though, and hopeful that it brings in some good answers.
I find it very fascinating. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I love that you are taking what informs you and the experiences that you've had yourself. Maybe the fact that folks might be understanding that it's you who are researching this might help motivate some of the women to respond more because they know that you are one of theirs. You are
yes.
one of their sisters.
That's
you've
the
walked
hope.
In their path, and so you are looking to help improve the organization. And I see that as a positive transition. I know that we're getting a little bit close to our next break, but when we come back, I want to be able to talk about transitions in general, what we're all going through in community, in our families, in industries. So you have been listening to Rainmakers, The Morning Voice. I'm Lydia Aranda. Our guest this morning is Cassie Diaz, and we'll hear back in just a moment. Good morning. We are back. This is Rainmakers on The Morning Voice. It's Monday, March 3rd, and I am your host, Lydia Aranda, with our guest this morning, Cassie Diaz. And we were just hearing a little bit from the late, great Aretha Franklin, Respect. R-E-S-P-E-C-T is definitely something we're talking about here as well. If you were listening right before the break, we were talking a lot about research in general of communications, of people's approaches to their own transitions, and what happens with the stimulation of microaggressions. Cassie, you are pursuing your PhD in these studies and in transitions, it seems like, in activities, when we are transitioning, whether it's as an individual or an organization, or maybe even a community into something new, or if we are regressing a little bit and transitioning that way, it stimulates lots of interaction, lots of thought. And you brought up during our break an interesting concept, there's probably a better word than concept, but self-inflicted microaggressions, things that we inflict upon ourselves because as we work through those changes or transitions, we might have our own extra confidence or lack of confidence, and that could stimulate. Talk to us a little bit more about that. What is self-inflicted microaggression, and how does that inform some of your studies?
Absolutely. I think the theme that seems to be emerging, and it's probably not, it's too broad, I would say, of a topic for me to use going into this specific research project, but a theme that's emerging and something that I would possibly add into the future research could use more research on the theme, self-inflicted microaggressions, because as we go through this topic, there's a lot of consideration to questions in a lot of our surveys that ask the question, did you feel comfortable going into the room? Did you feel comfortable being accepted? Did you feel comfortable with these questions? And as you're taking, you know, these surveys and understanding, what does comfortable mean? And why didn't I feel comfortable? What did that look like? I think it starts to like spur these questions in people's mind. Why didn't I feel like I had a seat at the table? Especially when they applied for the job. Their resume had all of the qualifications, certifications, everything that they needed to be in the role. You were qualified to be in the role. Why didn't you feel like you were supposed to be in the room? Or why didn't you feel this way? And there's been a plethora of answers. There's been a lot of conversation on this. But ultimately, what it comes down to, and you know, maybe to the mentor conversation that you were having with me earlier, is having the confidence to realize where you are in your place and time, and maybe, you know, again, to what you said earlier, taking that pause to reflect, I am a lifelong learner and I have been taking these studies for a period of time and I am at a point where I can talk on this subject as a subject matter expert. I think a lot of people might be a lifelong learner and be studying these things, but to your point earlier, they're not a communications background and they're nervous. What is my voice going to sound like when I share that message? Is it going to be received well? Are others going to see where I'm coming from, understand my background and see that? And so, you know, then I think you have, you know, the self-inflicted imposter syndrome that we all struggle with so dearly that we, you know, just wish we could push out of our lives, but we just keep bringing it back. And I think all those things continue to circulate around each other. And I'm super excited and thoughtful to the idea of self-inflicted microaggressions, because sometimes I think we do that to ourselves more often than we don't. And especially if we're in innovative environments where that's the curiosity of the environment. If we're in environments that are constantly changing, you're constantly doing different topics on this show. So having to like understand different industries and people and thought processes. And so are you ready for that conversation? Maybe the answer sometimes is no. But if we just look at it positively and we just take on the idea of how successful can we be?
Absolutely. You know what I like in that too, when I'm hearing you talk about self-inflicted microaggressions and what that's coming from, again, we were talking about energy earlier, and I liken it to that little bit of stage fright before someone's going to go on stage to either act, perform, sing, give a speech. You need that little bit of nervousness to get you there right before some sort of competition in sports. You need that little bit of oomph and just a teeny bit of angst to say, to get yourself back going, and that's the adrenaline. So I love that we are talking about something that is usually connotated as negative, microaggression, because often it feels that way, can actually be a positive to spur more conversation, better understanding, different kind of activity. And I dare say in the environment that we have now in our world, there's a lot of energy going on and people describe it as nervous or uncertain. There can be microaggression bursts, but as we are all trying to come together, maybe not as a whole kumbaya world, but as we are all faced with our tasks of how to make the world a better place, that might be in our workplace, in our home environment, in our community, we can use that kind of energy to maybe get us to the table for more collaborative exchange. And before we do that, we first have to be mindful and we have to listen to each other in the dialogue. So maybe that's where it comes from.
Absolutely.
So it can all be good or it can all be not bad.
Yes.
And that's where we are. So we're gonna talk more about collaborative change when we come back from our break. You're listening to Rainmakers. Good morning. This is Lydia Aranda. I am here this morning on our Monday morning Rainmakers show. It's the first Monday of March and also the kickoff of Women's History Month. I'm very pleased to have as my guest this morning an absolute history maker herself, Cassie Diaz. Cassie, thank you for being here. Welcome again to our second hour.
Thank you.
We were just listening to some of those news highlights, and it sounds like there have been some interesting things happening in the news and with people's activities. And yes, Matt Neely, as carpenters say, measure twice, cut once.
Right.
That woman was having a bad day all around. We have been talking with Cassie Diaz about career paths, about personal journeys, about motivation, not only for self, but how do we motivate a motivator? We've been talking about what happens in the study of intelligence, of intel, of data, and how that informs us to improve our communication, to take some action in our jobs or in our career fields, how we might share that intelligence information with others, be that organizations, be that agencies, or be that with other people. And then what happens when we tackle microaggressions and use them as information givers as well as energy givers so that it spurs action one way or the other. So, wow, so much going on in your world, Cassie.
Beautiful summary. Beautiful summary. I'm going to bring you with me everywhere I go.
I think it's so much fun when we really step back for a minute and think about everything that's happening in our world. So much change happening all the time. I dare say this is not anything new. Our world is always shifting and changing, whether it's in policy, whether it's as we age, we go through different decisions in our own selves and the role that we play with others. And certainly career fields and industries are changing all over the place, trying to adapt to the latest technologies and trying to figure out how do people serve the industry and lead the industry, whether that's with remote workers, whether that is with bigger teams, smaller teams, whether it's by adopting AI, whether, you know, all these things are swirling around at once. I dare say we have a great platform where we need to be speaking with each other, listening to each other, and as you said, empowering each other to use their voice, not only to share thoughts, opinions, and needs, but to state how they want to have a role in what happens going forward. I get the impression that these are the kind of things you tackle every day, all day long, yes, in your daily lives and in your work, particularly as a learning and development specialist. Yes?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your day-to-day when you're working either with your internal teams and or your clients or the customers that you serve.
Absolutely. When we think about what's next, when we think about what are we doing now, where are we now, what does now look like, and where we want to go, sometimes it's not the same place. And in reality, it shouldn't be. Where you are today shouldn't be where you are in 3 years or 5 years. There should be some opportunal growth, experiential growth. And what many people don't do all the time is go on for that additional learning and career development piece, whether it's going to a university, whether it's seeking out an industry certificate, mm-hmm, for what they need to continue to move and pivot forward. Most people don't do that. I went back to say that in the Marine Corps, when I was first going through, the idea was always to go to school, but at 17, I just didn't know who I wanted to be when I grew up. And most people, when I say that, they look at me like I'm crazy because I've been going to school for 25 years, one class at a time. And so they think I'm crazy. But, you know, when you're 16 and 17, do you really know what you want to be when you're, you know, 22? I didn't know that. But you have to commit to this bachelor's degree idea. You have to commit to, you know, a field of study or an idea. And I just didn't know that at 17. And when you look around, sometimes you look, you know, they're 22, 24, 25, early career individuals, and they still don't know that. Or they're saying, I just did that. I just went through a four-year program. I committed to, you know, this field. And they get to where they are, and some of them still don't know, like, which direction they potentially want to go. But then there might be this other group of people that they know where they want to go, and it's not where they are now, and they don't want to disrespect where they are now, whether it's their leadership teams, mentors. They want to be where they are for some period of time, but how do I go get a new certificate in a new industry without disrespecting the place I'm in? And so sometimes, you know, that's on your own time. That's time that you have to take to pause and reflect at home, you know, outside of your day job, outside of the work that you're doing, and you need to reflect and start making those positive footsteps forward. Because in reality, if you're making yourself a better person and you're working towards those additional goals, you're going to make your workplace better. You're going to make those relationships better that you were just talking about. there are so many resultants that come back from making those positive steps forward, even if they are branching out, because now you're offering information, knowledge, intelligence in spaces that other people in your group might not know.
Exactly.
So even staying in your own space might be influential because now you've grown your own space. So
I love how you describe all of that, because it goes back to learning and development of self helps the learning and development of those around you.
Yes.
And I think about exactly what you said, that some people know from the moment they step foot into kindergarten or open their first book or maybe even are read to for the first time, they know what they want to do and it kind of stays with them all their lives. And I dare say whether you are one of those people or you're someone else who constantly is saying, well, I'm not sure, you're being informed though by the learning of others and it's helping you learn. And even when we get that degree, even I like how you framed that sometimes what pauses us to make a change is we feel we need to hang in a little bit longer, that we need to show our commitment, that we're afraid to disrespect the commitment we've already made or the investment, whether it's moral, moral support or whether it's been financial support that others have made in us to complete a degree, the time that we have spent or even that our family has given up in support of us pursuing an additional degree or a different job, or maybe have even physically moved to another location. So we take that all into consideration and we don't want to disrespect that. But at the same time, if we're meant to advance, if we're meant to absorb more and be even a better person, a better leader, a better family member, whatever that might mean to each of us, then there's that opportunity cost. So we have to bring that into the mix too. That's part of learning and that's part of development. And you and I share in our jobs, whether it's at Department of Defense, whether it's with a contractor, whether it's in service in military or even in consulting or banking or any of the other things that we collectively engage in our professional lives. We also look at stakeholder and shareholder roles.
Yes.
As stakeholders or shareholders ourselves, or our role might be to ensure that stakeholders and shareholders are able to come together and get a return on their investment and to collaborate, which is a whole different kind of direction forward.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that involves a lot of learning and development and keeping people informed on what those changes may be happening in our company or in our community or in a project. Yes?
Yes.
So that's kind of an exciting place to be when we are learning ourselves how to chase more information and how to get informed from that data and then be able to translate that in communication over to those shareholders so that they can collaborate better, maybe support the cause more, maybe provide other resources. And in some of the community work that we do, I'd say almost anybody who serves on an advisory board, a governing board, a board of directors, or has influence somehow on an organization's mission and success is doing that, maybe isn't realizing that's what they're doing, but they're participating in shareholder collaboration.
Yes.
As well. Let's talk a little bit, not only right now, we have a couple minutes, and then when we come back from the next break, I'd love to dive a little bit more into the community service, the servant leadership kind of roles that you play, knowing all this wonderful stuff, this learned information that you have. Maybe one place to start might be the fact that you and I serve on a board together currently.
Yes.
It's called the Minority and Small Business Alliance of Southern Arizona, the MSBASA. It's been so great to have you on the board for this last year, and I've been on just a couple years longer than you, but we got to celebrate 30 years of the MSBASA this past year. 2024 was the 30th anniversary, and this is an organization that's all about small business success. Is not a membership organization, but we pull together as a board. There is no staff. It's all a volunteer board and support from community, whether that's through corporations or grants or private donations, to come together and provide informative resources to small business owners or even to those who are considering being a small business. Maybe they're still in school or maybe they're coming out of a career in the military and they're a veteran that wants to now start a small business. Or maybe they've come from corporate America and say, okay, I've retired there and now I'm going to use my expertise as a sole proprietor or I'm going to open up a retail shop, any of those things. Tell me, Cassie, before we go to break, what excited you about the MSBASA mission that allowed you to serve on the board, and what are we hoping to do going forward?
I'd really say the biggest thing for me that excited me about serving on the board is the organization's involvement with youth. I think as we continue to have this conversation about continuous learning, lifelong learning, really, the time that we give back to our youth today and the opportunities that we can offer them in leadership roles and in conversation are so experiential. And the scholarships, for example, that you guys were able to provide to this community, to Tucson, to Southern Arizona last year, were just phenomenal. And I think a lot of individuals see boards and groups like this as there's so many, right? There's so many groups mm-hmm. and nonprofits and who do I support and who do I go to and who do I help? And when you think about, like, do I want to go to a minority small business alliance organization or do I want to go to a veteran organization? Where do I want to put my time and my efforts? And you think about that, you know, the first thing that I usually ask is, what are you giving to the community? What are you giving back to the community? And what does that look like? And that's usually what informs my decision to support or not support, to be super honest. But I think we have to consider that. We have to consider what are organizations doing to give back to the community, and the opportunity that the scholarship recipients that spoke to at the gala this last year at the 30th was amazing. Having them come up and talk about their experiences themselves was a great segue too, because we got to hear directly from them and what they're doing right now in their educational experience. I think one of them like made me like not tear up, but like, oh, like that, it was super sentimental, their share on the stage. And I just really thought to myself, like, this is an organization that's truly giving back to the community. And you know, some organizations do that better than others. Some organizations do the share of what they're doing in the community better than others. And I think, you know, MSBA of Southern Arizona is one that for me is doing that share really, really well and sharing that experience. And I think we have to remember as stakeholders, what's your purpose and why are you here? It's not always for the adults in the room.
That's really not true. Well, I appreciate that summary that you're giving our listeners to learn more about MSBASA. And it's true. Small business owners, an alliance, an opportunity to learn, and an opportunity to give back to those going to college out of Southern Arizona. Scholarships, I've never heard that we have too many.
Exactly.
So we're doing our part there. We'll talk more about that after a break. You've been listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice, KVOI.
Hey, and Lydia, right before I turn this back to you, got a couple of more passes to see the Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus Classic Concert. It's this weekend, Saturday at Our Mother of Sorrows Church, Sunday at St. Mark's Church. You can take your pick. And I got a voucher good for two tickets. And it's yours if you give me a call at 520-790-2040. That's 790-2040. You'll be going to see the Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus Classic Concert this weekend. All right, Lydia.
Thank you, Matt. Loving the background music. Thank you. The wonderful Diana Ross and her I'm Coming Out. A really fun vibe for this morning. This is Lydia Aranda, and I'm here on Rainmakers with The Morning Voice. And we are excited to have not only a fabulous guest, Cassie Diaz, but we have a caller who's been patiently waiting as we took that commercial break. Caller on line two, I think we've got Timber. Timber was asking, what kind of training is required to be a UAV pilot? That would be an unmanned aerial vehicle pilot. Timber, thanks for calling in. Did I get your question right?
Yes, well, every time we hear the frog sing, we know that spring is coming. And we know that in the native lands, you know, weather is used for many different purposes. As the drones can be weaponized, they can also be used for very helpful things. And I wonder, you perhaps could tell us, what are some of the positive uses of drones that they are currently not being used for, because perhaps it's not commercially viable, but could be very helpful, like the wind, the rain, the earth, the sky. Thank you.
Timber, that's a great question. Cassie, let's tackle what Timber's asking about, not only maybe the training required, but what are some of the more positive, optimistic uses of UAV pilots?
Absolutely. Thank you for the question. I'd start by saying, if you're thinking commercially and you're interested in becoming a UAV pilot, I would start with your FAA Part 107, with the FAA taking that training and that testing. You'll see this type of training completed right now by a lot of residential employees that are working in real estate, and they usually have some type of videographer or videographer, and they are taking these videos. They are generally going to be Part 107 qualified. That's the term that you're going to hear. So I would definitely take a look into that. But I would also share that there are a lot of positive use cases happening in the commercial industry right now with UAVs and drones, in particular with agriculture. The University of Arizona, and perhaps it's on the Wonder Listen podcast on Fridays, but there is a huge agricultural push right now with drones, right now investigating the integrity of soil, where best to plant along farmlands, best use case based on climate, environment, and really trying to get the best crop yield. So you're going to see a lot of technologies that are focused on understanding soil, ground, and what the fertilizer is doing in addition to that. So there are actually a lot of use cases expanded across multiple universities in the United States right now. There are a lot of commercial testing grounds where they are trying to understand what that looks like. And I'd even expand that to share, you know, from UAVs to even ground equipment. Caterpillar, for example, has autonomous vehicles that additionally support this effort also. And there are multiple, you know, like joint efforts combined between UAVs and ground vehicles that are happening that additionally test these series and ideas and ensure that, you know, wherever the farmers are going to plant, it's going to be the best case situation. Maybe they have to wait a year or two on some of their lands to produce the best yield. But there are quite a few use cases across the U.S. right now that are using drones and other unmanned autonomy in these environments today.
Cassie, thank you so much. That's really exciting. And Timber, I hope that answered your question. Thanks for bringing it up, because I love that you were not only curious about the learning that goes into that and training, but you wanted to hear the positive aspects. And that's what we're about here on The Morning Voice. So Timber, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
And Cassie, you really talked about a lot of the different industries that use UAVs. So videography plays into that, and I think is a great example of multi-skill sets that go into a positive use for many industries. We talked about all kind of different industries, agriculture, mining, looking at the integrity of soil. I love that. But also, of course, some other things, safety and I'm going to say safety, which is not always law enforcement. It might just be safety, doing storm prediction, doing noticing if other kinds of maybe sparks that might lead to wildfires can be noticed ahead of time, or any of those kinds of things. Certainly traffic control, and we think of those kind of things as well. And I think it makes for very interesting opportunities, not only for youth, but for anyone who's in an industry who might be looking to use their skill set differently, might think about becoming one of these pilots or using their skills for use with another person who's got this technology and finding a job that way.
Yes, absolutely, completely agree. And to your point, Lydia, they are using drones currently in the police department, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Forest Service. You're going to see drone programs just popping up all over the place, not just with the government, but also in commercial industries also. So very, very true.
Well, and we were also talking about lifelong learning. That's important to both of us. And that is something that we've been speaking about this whole morning, is learning and development. And kind of listening to our own curiosities and how that motivates us to do more. So lifelong learning can be taking on a technology that might seem out of our normal space, but really could be applied in many ways. You know, I think back to creativity and the role that that plays not only in business success, but in personal journeys and personal achievement. Curiosity on how something that maybe is a standard tool or product could be used in a new way, mm-hmm. Is often something that necessity is the mother of invention. And we hear about those kind of things where somebody thinks just about creating something new. But part of the creativity process to me, and in many classes and other sessions where I've learned from other experts in creativity, is they think about sometimes it's taking something standard and making it applicable in a new way. So you think about Purell and how we know that it's for hand sanitizer, but it can be used in other ways. We think about, the invention of Post-it notes came from a sticky product not being useful in the way it was originally designed, but finding out it had a new application, you know. And so same thing with technology. If we blend it instead of being afraid of it, maybe the blend of it can allow for diverse use.
Absolutely.
And that expands all of us, not only in tools that we have, but in how we might come together.
Agree.
We are coming up on another break. You're listening to Rainmaker. I'm Lydia Aranda, and we've been talking this morning with Cassie Diaz. Stick with us. We'll be back shortly. Good morning. This is Lydia Aranda. I am the host of Rainmakers on The Morning Voice here at KVOI. It is Monday, March 3rd, the first Monday of March and the first Monday of Women's History Month. We've been speaking this morning on Rainmakers with Cassie Diaz, who is absolutely a people champion, a storyteller, a career and learning developer, and someone who really motivates others. She's the motivator of other motivators, and we've been having a great conversation about servant leadership, about service to community, about how we ask questions in our own journey, how we find ourselves through our own microaggressions, through transition, through communication, through responding to those microaggressions. And all of a sudden, we are talking just in the last segment about how more learning and training for UAVs, which are unmanned aerial vehicles, can actually help in a number of different industries. We've talked about military service. We've talked about moving from one location to another and taking a big chance, taking a big leap to find out something, to be curious about where we're going. I think I got it all under that summary. What do you think, Cassie?
It's
been a
so.
Fun conversation.
For sure. Really, really good.
I love that we had a caller earlier that asked us first to talk a little bit about development, and you were able to mention, among many things, that U of A has a fantastic program for UAV pilot training and learning and the application into so many industries. And I love that our caller also asked us about the positivity of that sometimes as news often can be sensational, that we only hear if something goes wrong with a drone or a UAV, but this was more about how can it be used positively. And Cassie, you talked about the fact that videography, that agriculture, and similar things happening in Caterpillar with autonomous vehicles. There's just so much that happens in the world of technology. We just are barely touching the top.
100%.
We also have been talking today about collaboration. I know it sort of seems that that wasn't really our topic, but it really has been an underlying theme, how we help each other, how organizations or departments might come together, whether that's as military contractors or in military service itself, you know, different divisions coming together. And then in everyday life as leaders, how we come together to tackle or maybe support an initiative. And with that, we spoke a little bit about MSBA SA. Anybody listening who's wondering a little bit more about that, it is a small business alliance that's been around 30 years here in Southern Arizona that is focused on giving training and information resources to entrepreneurs or to wannabe small business owners on how they might get some training, get certification, maybe go after funding, and also tips and tricks in lots of different aspects of small business, labor issues, tax and CPA issues, where they might participate to find more workers, how they might train their workers or get benefits for their workers. So lots of different things around small business centered here in Southern Arizona. If you want to hear more or learn more about the organization, please visit msbasa.org. Cassie and I are very excited to be serving on that board of directors. But Cassie, tell us a little bit more about other organizations you support.
So right now, I would also share that the Society of Women Engineers mm-hmm. Tucson group currently has a scholarship opportunity available with a couple of applicants. So that's really exciting. I sit on that group as their scholarship chair. So again, as I've shared, just scholarships for our youth are extremely important to me. And then I'd additionally share the Women Marines Association here in Tucson. I support them as their secretary. And then just recently, my most recent opportunity is with the Children's Museum here in Tucson. And this group is super energetic. They bring a lot of energy, as you've said a couple of times in this conversation, but really great group. Super excited to support them and supported quite a few groups within Tucson in the past couple of years, and really excited to be where I am today supporting the different entities. Everyone's doing such great work, and I would say all of these groups really work on working with our youth, supporting our youth, empowering our youth, and putting money back into the colleges and universities in this area. So really great to be a part of these organizations.
That's fantastic. And I think we said it in one of our previous segments, we were talking about the fact that there are so many organizations that support youth or support young adults or even older adults in education by providing scholarship. And while it can be a little bit overwhelming or confusing about where should somebody go to apply for a scholarship or why do we have so many organizations, I think once in a while people ask me that question, and yes. I always say, well, it's education, and education is a lifelong journey. There are many opportunities to pursue education, even if it's just curiosity, even if somebody has had the wonderful experience to be able to get through their career, retire comfortably. That doesn't mean the learning stops or has to stop. And many people decide to pursue education, more education, just out of the sheer learning. Others do it to be able to advance in their chosen field. And any of those things I think are great. And I've never heard that we finally tackled all the needs and everybody has enough scholarships, so therefore we don't need to do it. So that's always my answer too, is the more we learn, the more we need to learn. So if we can raise funds in any capacity to be able to help folks who are pursuing their education in any form, I find that something very positive for the community at large.
Same.
Where we're going. It is Women's History Month, and we have mentioned a couple of women as we were listening to some of the great music that Matt puts in our egress and ingress. But also there are some women that unfortunately we have lost that maybe we have an opportunity to give a shout out to. One person that comes to mind that I just recently learned of, and I think it would be appropriate to mention, is Miss Shirley Agnos. She's been known around the state for her absolute contributions to Arizona Town Hall and much in the civic engagement world. And not only her own service to our great state of Arizona in so many capacities, but so many people that she has mentored. And unfortunately, we lost her just a couple weeks ago at the ripe old age of 86. We lost Shirley, but her legacy lives on in so many forms, in so many people, men and women, who she took under her wing. She was a big champion of young people getting engaged in the civic world and in processes and in policy and in just being leaders in their own right, in their own communities. So Shirley, we miss you. I do know from an announcement that there will be a memorial service and celebration of Shirley's life that is open to the public coming up in mid-April. So if anybody has questions about that, they should look up Arizona Town Hall and find out more. So that's one tribute. And at the top of this, we also had, I know this is a little bit off, but she was female. So we're going to say that, unfortunately, here in Tucson at our Reed Park Zoo, we have lost the famous and very popular lion, Kaya, because she was older and had a degenerative disease and unfortunately is no longer with us. But as the leader of her pride, as I believe she was a mother, had a cub, and she was very loved by community. So Kaya, rest in peace and thank you for all you did for showing the patrons of Reed Park Zoo and others around, animal caretakers and all that, just how wonderful the bond between animals and caretakers can be, and being a wonderful lioness. And separate from that, I'm going to give one more tribute. As I'm going to take a point of privilege here. Today is March 3rd, and today would have been my father's 88th birthday. We lost him a few years ago, but Luis Aranda was a fabulous dad, a fabulous teacher, a great advocate of community, and I have to say, one of the best champions overtly and behind the scenes of women. So, Daddy, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
And with that, we're going to go to commercial for our last segment. You're listening to Rainmakers. And we're back. This is Rainmakers. I am Lydia Aranda, and we have been here on this first Monday of March and the first Monday of Women's History Month on the Rainmakers Show. Our guest this morning has been Cassie Diaz, and she has given us so many fabulous insights into her really diverse and very thorough career, her personal career, her journey from San Antonio into Tucson, and the fact that in her career and in her family, she has had many opportunities to take assignments post-military and with her career into other states, and then keeps coming back, and now I think for the third time coming back, has settled here in Tucson. She's definitely one of our champions, one of our women leaders. She calls herself a people champion, and there's no doubt about it, the way she interacts with not only her peers, but youth, as well as folks of all ages who may or may not be in the same industry space as she, but she helps motivate them. One of the things that Cassie has shared with us this morning was that learning is a lifelong experience, that in organizations, we have lots of opportunity to continue learning, whether that's formal or informal. And in that space, it might bring us to new career opportunities as well, as she has found in her own exploration and studies. One of the things that Cassie is very known for is not only being curious about others and about new information, but she has taken it to a new level and is now a doctoral student. She's a PhD candidate at Grand Canyon University, and she is studying the United States Marine Corps veteran women microaggressions and how those predict organizational commitment. What she means is, how does that spur the desire to get more involved or to stay in a department or an organization? And what are the risks when that energy makes one want to bounce? So lots of interesting learning that we've had. And again, it is the first day of the first Monday of Women's History Month. And all month long, we are going to be celebrating lots of different women, those who are with us, maybe some of those who have passed and left some legacy legacy. And earlier you heard me give a tribute to Shirley Agnos, a tribute to my father, because today would have been his 88th birthday. And now I'm going to do a small shout out to my mother, Virginia Piscata, Dr. Virginia Piscata. She was a Tucson native. She attended the U of A as well as ASU, and she was the first in her family not only to go to college but to earn a PhD. She was a community advocate and educator in her own right, and Mama, we miss you very much. And you have shaped so many people, so many women, and so many champions of community. So giving a shout out to you as well on this Monday morning. Matt, it's been an exciting morning.
It has, and Cassie, you know, early on in the discussion, emphasized the role of Fort Huachuca, as the important role of what it does there and UAVs. So it's kind of interesting getting a shout out for Fort Huachuca.
Absolutely,
it's got a great legacy, but it's not all in the past. It's now and it's in the future, and so there's a lot of good stuff going on there. And you know what she was talking about: the more you're willing to, even within your field, if you're willing to open yourself up to new processes and new ideas, the more you learn, it just helps your career path open up before you. So that's a great healthy attitude that she has, and one that she is imparting to people that, you know, people influenced her, and now she's acting as a positive influence to, I would say, younger people. She seems very young as it is, but she's definitely helping the people that are coming behind her in the workplace, and that's a good thing.
It sure is. And I love one of the things that Cassie said. She talked about the fact that her role in her organization is very much in learning and career development, but it's not part of HR, the way they have it organized. She is working as an engineer who supports other engineers, so to speak, and talks about being the learning champion and helping to spur their learning on, and to do it alongside whatever the formalities that a human resources department will do or learning and training department will do. And she's over there being a champion in a different way. And I think it's wonderful how she really describes how all these things really come together as more of a whole ecosystem of development instead of just one role or one title. I found that interesting.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So this has been a wonderful morning that we've had here. It is breezy and brisk this morning.
Just a bit.
Seems like we were having that warm, warm weather, and now we're back to
It's really weird because it is going to warm up through Wednesday, and then it's going to cool off. It's going to be kind of chilly again Thursday and Friday with chances of rain. So, you know, we were all thinking, oh, we're all out of the woods. Springtime is here. Well, it was the end of February, which is, you know, still, I wouldn't say dead in the middle of winter, but it's,
a little nippy.
Spring doesn't technically start until the third week of March, so we'll
right.
get there.
So we have some time, and they do say it gets windier, comes in like a lion, out like a lamb. Isn't that the old phrase?
Yeah, whatever lie we tell ourselves to think that we know what's going to come next weather-wise.
Sure.
Except we know it's going to be, and the one absolute we know is it's going to be warmer than we like it before we know it.
Yes, yeah. And so we will take it. We'll take these breezes and these brisk mornings as much as we can. I have to say it's been another wonderful Monday morning here on Rainmakers as part of The Morning Voice here on KVOI. It's so exciting when we get callers, and so I want to thank our callers from earlier. And I don't know if you wrapped
and
up
Bill,
that.
Bill and Pat are going to be going to see the Tucson Arizona Boys Course. So
wonderful!
This weekend. So
yes, that was a great promotion.
Some more passes tomorrow. If you're listening, I think we might have a couple more to give away.
Yes, we need to make sure that people call in and get those free passes. There's nothing more wonderful than music, and being able to go see it is fantastic. Well, with that, I know we've got Wynn coming up next, and it's been another fabulous morning. Thank you, Matt Neely, and the whole KVOI team. It's been exciting to be here on Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda, wishing you a great Monday.